Indeed, from Limerick, friends, I am very happy to welcome somebody I'm proud to call a friend. He is Michael Dowling and is a native of Knockaderry in County Limerick. He is the president and CEO of Northwell Health. It's the largest private sector employer in New York State with more than 77,000 employees. And Michael Dowling, you're very welcome indeed to the program.
Thank you so much. Very happy to be here and delighted to be able to have a conversation with you. Thank you. And thank you for everything that you do, Adrian. You do just wonderful, wonderful work and have been doing so for so many years. Just absolutely important and impressive. Thank you.
Well, since we're on the topic anyway, I'd like to, you know, let everybody know that you're a co-recipient of an award. It's the Presidential Distinguished Service Award, which was awarded by Michael D. Higgins, President of Ireland. And again, when it comes to, and I'm not going to get into comparing, those who deserve the award, but I do want to tell you, Michael Dowling, that the tremendous response there is to you as head of Northwell Health in New York. In addition to that, you are a renowned leader and a go-to person and executive for health systems around the United States. And I'd like to, you know, start off with the news of the day and one that has taken many by surprise, and that is New York's indoor mask mandate, which takes place effective this Monday, where New York Governor, indeed Kathy Hochul, is re-implementing mask mandates. For many, Michael Dowling, this is the straw that might break the camel's back. But I'm interested in your read of the situation and what should we be doing at this point.
Well, thank you for that. And I think that the policy is appropriate at this point. New York has been doing relatively well against the virus, and especially downstate in the New York area, and we have got to keep it that way. So if you want to put a barrier between you and the virus, then you have to do some things that sometimes are a little bit inconvenient. And one of the concerns here is that around the holiday season, people tend to get together in large groups of large family gatherings. And if you don't take some extra precaution, you're going to see a major uptick in cases and an uptick in hospitalizations. We saw that a little bit over Thanksgiving. And we don't want it to happen again. And sure, I know people are annoyed and people are a little bit concerned. But if you want to fight this thing and beat it, then you have to do something sometimes that don't make you too comfortable. And, you know, wearing a mask, we do it all the time in the healthcare field. It's not as inconvenient as people think. I mean, people make up all of these reasons why this is terrible to do, et cetera. But at the end of the day, if you want to win against this virus, you're fighting a war. Then you use every armament that you possibly can. And masking indoors in large groups is, in my view, an appropriate thing to do. We don't want to go backwards. If you want the economy to come back the way it should, then you got to control this virus so that we can get everybody back to work and we get the economy moving again, which is beginning to happen. So, yes, I understand the concern, but I would ask people to be a little bit patient, to comply, and more importantly, to get vaccinated, because the problem we have today, Adrian, is that the unvaccinated people are 10 times more likely to end up in the hospital with serious infection. And I, for one, cannot understand why all of those people out there will just not get vaccinated. So if we all got vaccinated, we get the booster shot, we wear masks when we're in large groups, we will be looking back at this month from now and say we have beaten this and we can move on with life in a relative normal way. So, yeah, I support it.
You have indeed received a lot of criticism, whereas health systems throughout the United States, many of whom do not have a reserve of employees, obviously, throughout this pandemic, a lot of healthcare doctors, nurses, employees of hospital, some of them have resisted the necessity for vaccines, and a lot of people said that your edict that if you want to work in Northwell Health System, get vaccinated or choose somewhere else. Rather harsh. And as I say, you did get a lot of criticism for it, but tell us how that came about and how you took the lead again for hospital systems throughout the United States and saying, hey, if you're not vaccinated, you're not welcome here.
Well, yes, I've got quite a lot of criticism, including demonstrations at my house, which went on for weeks and weeks, and I understand that. Ever so often, though, when you do what you think is right and you take, very bold decisions, then you're obviously going to have to accept the criticism that comes with it, and I'm fine with that. We here at Northwell, all of our employees are vaccinated. We're 100% vaccinated. We decided, and of course that was a state mandate as well. The state did put out a mandate that said if you work in healthcare, you'd have to be vaccinated. And I implemented that very, very quickly. It is hard to tell a person, especially in healthcare, that you're going to come to one of our facilities and you're going to be treated by a person who is unvaccinated. Are you going to come in contact with somebody that is unvaccinated, therefore increasing the likelihood that you could potentially get an infection? You come to a healthcare facility to get better, not potentially to get worse. So, for me, it was a very logical position to take. I'm not sorry I took it at all. I would take it again. And what I want to say is I want to compliment the 98% of my employees who willingly got vaccinated and said, yes, this is right. You know, obviously, sometimes the media will focus on that minority that gets all the attention. But I had, less than 2% of my employees say no, but 98%+ of my employees saying yes. I go with the employees who say yes. And I have been out in the hospitals talking to staff, meeting with staff, and they are effusive in their support of this. So it was the right thing to do. And I encourage everybody, especially in healthcare, to do this. We have a special obligation when you work in healthcare and a special responsibility. And anybody that has been through the past 2 years, seeing what went on in the hospitals and the level of illness that we witnessed, and I was in the hospitals every day, walking the floors, it's unconscionable then to say, we have this terrible virus, it could do terrible things, cause major death, but it's okay to be non-vaccinated so you could potentially, transmit it to others. It's an illogical position. Just as I find the argument that people make that they don't want to get vaccinated and come up with all sorts of reasons that I don't find logic behind at all. If we want to win the war against the virus, then we have to do things to win. Don't take half measures. You take full measures so that you can eventually beat it to the extent that it is beatable, and it's on.
Yeah, I want to draw attention and get your reaction to those who have been vaccinated, those who took the booster. But now they have to make decisions with respect to their children, their own family. They say it's one thing for us to be vaccinated, but I don't know. Let's wait and see how this shakes out with children over five years of age, now 5 to 11. Is there an understanding as to why those who have actually done the right thing all along are now hesitant to have their children vaccinated?
Well, you know, you're always concerned about your kids, and I can understand that people worry a little bit about what their kids get, that they consider not to be necessarily appropriate. But the science is good here, and the studies that have been done that indicate that the vaccine is a preventive mechanism against the virus, and it's appropriate for kids. And I would strongly, like I do with adults, I strongly encourage them to get their kids vaccinated. I mean, we get kids vaccinated for lots of different things. whether it's rubella, I remember back in, sometimes looking at the history, with the polio vaccine.
Yes.
Back decades ago, I mean, people lined up saying, please, please, please get me the vaccine. I don't want to get polio. But today we seem to have lost this sense of community or commitment to helping and protecting those around us. That sense of obligation to one another is being lost a little bit, and it's unfortunate. So while I understand the issue with kids, I think that parents should sit back and say the last thing you want is your kids to get the vaccine, to get the virus, and be quite sick. I should be making the decisions to make sure I prevent that. And one of the ways to do it is the vaccine. So, yeah, I understand it, but I would still strongly encourage parents to vaccinate their children as long as the science is there, and for kids over age 5 it is.
Michael Dowling, it's considered to be by some a distraction, but the reality of the new Omicron variant is something that's very real. It is considered to be much more deadly than the Delta variant. But is that true? That's not true.
Well, it's at the very beginning, and this is something that we always have to be careful of. You know, whenever there is a new thing that comes out, especially when it's regarding your health, there's a lot of hysteria. People panic, and sometimes some of the media exaggerates the circumstance. You know, when it came out, we were told, this potentially could be the most deadliest thing we've seen, that it wouldn't be receptive to the virus, to the vaccine, et cetera, et cetera. And it's being demonstrated now that, yeah, it's a serious issue, but the vaccine is effective against it. It does not seem to be as bad as what we were initially told. But again, the best protection is the vaccine. If you get vaccinated, it will help against it. And one of the things, Adrian, here to remember is we're going to have various mutations of this over the next 12 months. We're going to be back and forth on this for at least during the whole of 2022. It will take that long for us to be able to say, I believe, that we basically have beaten this. It will continue. And then for years and next year and the year after, we will in all likelihood be getting an annual booster or an annual pill. Yeah. And just like, with the flu shot and with other things. So the viruses don't ever completely disappear. We learn how to manage them. We learn how to protect ourselves against them. We learn how to take medications that will ameliorate the problem. It doesn't mean that if you get vaccinated that you automatically 100% guaranteed that you will not get the virus. But you in all likelihood will not get very, very sick. Just like if you get the flu shot, it doesn't automatically guarantee that you won't get some kind of the flu. For example, in my circumstance, I got the flu shot earlier this year, but 2 weeks ago, I got the rhinovirus, which is an element of the flu, and I felt pretty bad for about 4 or 5 days. We go through that circumstance every year, so. We have to be a little bit, we have to be optimistic. We have to be upbeat. We have to be thinking about what it is we can do to win. but understanding that we use science and we use the advances in medicine to protect us against those things which otherwise we can't. And unfortunately, because of the advances that have been made in science, including now with the new with the vaccines that are effective against Omicron, then that's another reason why we should have universal vaccination. Everybody should just get vaccinated and get the booster, because we do know that the vaccine, if you get it 8-9 months ago, it begins to wane. So getting the booster is unbelievably important. It's within our control. It's what we do that will determine whether we win or not. If we do not do what we think we should do and do the right thing, then obviously we're going to have more serious problems going forward, and the economy will not come back the way it should be. And one other thing I will say, and I do believe that there'll be more discussion about this, is that, you know, more and more people are going back to work. And I think with the right precautions, more and more people should be going back to work. And but that will depend upon whether people comply with the vaccine and the booster.
Some people appear, anyway, you're talking about, and we've heard every excuse known to mankind as to why, the vaccine. We wait for it to shake out and see, how effective it is and all the rest of it. Now, there are those who now think that, well, if there's, maybe I'll get a vaccine now. How do we catch up with the three, well, in most cases anyway, with the Pfizer, we've already had three. We've had the first, the second, some weeks later, and then the booster shot. So how do people who have resisted up until now all vaccines, where do they start?
Well, you know, there's another contextual issue here that's important to mention, and that is we live in an unbelievably toxic political environment. Where if one political party says do something, then the opposing party says that's the reason not to do it at all. As I said, we have lost that sense of community. So much of this has little to do, in my view, with science. It has an awful lot to do with politics. If a Democrat says something, the Republicans say no. If the Republican says something, some of the Democrats say the opposite. We've lost that sense of collegiality. So I come across people all the time that say, and you should see some of the emails I get, where basically we make this argument that the vaccine has a chip in it that allows Democrats to control you and track every movement. Some of the stuff is absolutely insane and completely illogical. So you have to put that in this broader toxic politics and in the toxic context that we're currently living, which is so unfortunate. Back to your question, I think it takes some people a little bit longer to say, well, maybe I got to comply. It's time for me to understand after I watch all of the people that have taken the vaccine and have had very positive results that now I should do the same thing. For example, of the people, I, as you had mentioned at the very beginning, about 1,800 people decided not to continue to work at Northwell and refused to take the vaccine. And they obviously were not working with us anymore. Now, many of those, a couple of hundred of those people who were adamantly against it have in the last, couple of weeks come back and said, okay, I now will change my mind, and I will get the vaccine. And I think there's a whole series of reasons for that. One could be that they get pressure from family, friends, and peers. Two is that they decide themselves that, yes, it was appropriate and my original decision was wrong. Or that there's economics. You know, I had a job. I was working. I was bringing home a paycheck, and now I'm not. Therefore, I have to comply with the requirement of employment. So I think it's sometimes – the fact that it takes some people longer than others to comply, as long as they eventually comply, that's not bad. Some people take a long time to do a lot of things. compared with others. But if they eventually completely comply, then I think that it's something to applaud.
Yeah. I want to ask you, you know, about a reality, and that is that, you know, with 77,000 plus employees, the hospital, according to, you know, all of the surveys that are taken, the hospitals are filling up again. There was a slight reprieve period where, yes, elective surgeries were able to go ahead. How does a hospital or your hospital healthcare system deal with, you know, the surgeries, all the other life-threatening health issues when, you know, when you have, you know, a great number of your facilities and health facilities throughout the United States expecting and indeed living up to the expectation, people who have been unvaccinated, you know, in the colloquialism, taking up the rooms and taking up the beds. How is that? What's the analysis there, number one?
Yeah, it's a complicated issue, but let me attempt to answer you. We are very, very busy at the moment, and every hospital is very busy, and there's a couple of reasons. One is that obviously you have COVID, but then you have the flu as well. And the other thing that's happening is quite a number of people over the last year and a half delayed getting health care. And that can be really problematic for quite a lot of people, especially older people with serious conditions. And so now, of course, more and more people are getting more comfortable coming back to the hospitals and catching up on missed care over the past year and a half, and that is increasing. And, of course, this time of year, it's always busy anyway. So when you have lots of volume coming in and you have COVID, it requires an organization to be very agile and flexible and have the right infrastructure to be able to create the capacity irrespective of the volume of patients that come in. So, for example, we are a very large health system, as you have mentioned, but we're very well organized. We have very, very talented people that know how to do this. And so if I have extra volume and I have to create extra beds, I can create extra beds. I know how to do it. If I had to create another 500 beds in the next 2 months, I know we can do it. We can increase the capacity to meet the increasing volume. We did that last year. During the height of the COVID, we created the 2,000 extra beds that we did not have prior to COVID. That requires being able to organize yourself the right way. It requires being able to move patients from one hospital that's very busy to another hospital that may not be that busy. It requires moving staff from outpatient to inpatient, from home care to inpatient. We call it load balancing. So you got to be able to move staff. You got to be able to create new beds. And you have to have all of the PPE, et cetera, especially for COVID, and all of the other supplies that you need. We have that at Northwell. We have no problem whatsoever. And I've been telling the press a lot recently that whatever happens with regard to in this area where we're located, we will be able to handle it. We're talented in this regard. We know how to do it. And we're also helping other people in other parts of New York State. When you don't have a very large health system where you have hospitals, outpatient, home care, et cetera, it becomes a little bit more difficult. If you're a single hospital all by yourself, without the support of a larger system, it gets more complicated. So it's a difficult question to answer quickly, but it depends an awful lot on how well you're organized, the types of staff that you've got, the agility of your organization, the ability to move fast and to be entrepreneurial and creative. And at Northwell, That is our culture, is to be creative. My attitude is there is no problem that we cannot beat. There is no issue that will defeat us. We are optimistic. We will handle it. As somebody once said, you know, it's not what happens to you that matters. It's how you react to it. And in healthcare, we're hit with crises all the time. So you have to become very adept at how to react to the crisis and deal with it. And this is no different. It's just in a bigger scale, but it's no different. And for those places that are having difficulty, we are helping them to the extent that we can. And, of course, we work very closely with New York State and with the governor's office on this as well. So it's a long-winded answer to your question, Adrian, but if you hire the right talent, organize yourself the right way, have all the different parts of healthcare that are integrated and work with one another, this becomes a manageable issue. We have no choice but to succeed.
I want to thank you for that and also point out that Northwell Health has set the bar very high indeed, but it has become a model for healthcare systems, and that's very much acknowledged throughout the United States. It's not new to you, as we've heard you say many times. There's no such thing as you can't do. If something appears to be so monumental, you shouldn't even bother trying it. You didn't learn that, in Knockaderry in Limerick. You have to figure a way around it. Not always successfully, but you have to go through. And that brings me to, your book, Leading Through a Pandemic, which was published during the COVID-19 crisis. And just as an aside, it's a great Christmas gift. And it's on Amazon. You have undertaken some of a tremendous never before tried solutions, and again that is something that most of us would just shy away from and say, listen, if that could have been done, it would have been done long before my time.
When you're faced with a problem, you've got a number of options, or you're faced with a big issue. And I don't ever look at things as challenges, and I tell staff this all the time. There's no such thing as a challenge. There's opportunity. And when you're faced with an issue, you can either run away from it, you can hide from it, you can blame other people for it, which seems to be what a lot of people do these days, is they blame everybody else. They play victim. I don't believe in any of that. You have an issue, you tackle it. And you tackle it. And I use this analogy with staff a lot. I say to them when they come up, when they talk to me about issues that are very complex, I say, and they'll say, well, it's very, very large and big. I say, well, how do you eat an apple? If I give you an apple, you want to eat it, but you don't swallow it. You take a bite. Mm. You chew it. You take a second bite. You chew it. And within a very, very short period of time, you've solved the problem. You've eaten the apple. Most large, complex issues are like that. You tackle it. And you also, the other thing, you don't be afraid of failure. You fail. We fail all the time. Because you learn from failure, as long as you can correct, don't lose confidence, and move forward, you're going to win. Failure is an inherent ingredient in success. As Churchill once said, success is going from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm. So that's the attitude that we take. And, we're all in this world for a short period of time. We can either exist or we can make a difference. I choose, and like with a lot of people, and like you, Adrian, we choose to make a difference. You want to look back and say, what did I do yesterday? And then be not too completely satisfied, but get up in the morning and say, yeah, yesterday was okay, but let me show you what I can do tomorrow. Tomorrow can always be better than yesterday. And we have to have that sense of confidence and try to inspire that confidence in other people around. There is nothing that is totally insurmountable. And that is true with this virus. We will beat this virus. But there will be another one. You know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, there will be another one. And we will beat that too. Hopefully, if we learn from the lessons this time around, we'll be better prepared for the next one. So it's a progression. It's a journey. The goalposts at the end of the journey keep moving. You have many successes in life, but you're never ever completely successful, because but every success you have demonstrates another issue that you've got to deal with. So I feel great about being around great, talented people, and I'm very fortunate at Northwell to be able to be with such people, and also very fortunate to know people like you, Adrian, that you know, you've gone out there and you have changed the world by what you've done. That's why we're here. We're kind of renting space for a period of time. And hopefully when we leave, people say, well, he made a little bit of a difference. He just didn't exist.
Michael Dowling, friends, and I don't have to add anything to the reputation and to the good that Michael Dowling continues to do for somebody who came from Limerick and is president and CEO of Northwell Health with responsibility for 77,000 plus employees. I think we ought to listen to him, and I think the bottom line here is that we hear loudly is this is not a time to dither over whether we should get the vaccine or not. I thank you. I thank you, Michael Dowling, for all you do, and particularly, you know, at a time where the winter surge, the Christmas surge, and gatherings leave us more vulnerable. Again, thank you, and happy Christmas to you and to your family, and, of course, to all the people you help through Northwell Health.
And best to everybody, all the people listening and others, you know, have a great holiday and be grateful for what we've got.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Okay,
friends, great advice from somebody who has actually done something spectacular. He's been consistent with his messages, and as you know, there is light when so many others feel, well, you know, we dodged the bullet up until now, but this one seems like it might be insurmountable. That's why, you know, we have a leader in Michael Dowling and Northwell Health. Okay, we're going to head for